Other powers of Congress. Congress may establish uniform laws relating to naturalization and bankruptcy. It may also coin money, regulate the value of American or foreign currency, and punish counterfeiters. Congress may fix the standards of weights and measures. Furthermore, Congress may establish post offices and post roads. The roads, however, need not be exclusively for the conveyance of mail. Congress may promote the progress of science and useful arts by granting copyrights and patents, though perpetual copyrights and patents are prohibited. The Supreme Court has ruled in Eldred v. Ashcroft, 2003, that repeated extensions to the term of copyright do not constitute perpetual copyright. Also note that this is the only power granted where the means to accomplish its stated purpose is specifically provided for. Courts inferior to the Supreme Court may be established by Congress. Congress has several powers related to war and the armed forces. Under the War Powers Clause, only Congress may declare war, but in several cases it has, without declaring war, granted the President the authority to engage in military conflicts. 5 wars have been declared in American history: the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and World War II. Some historians argue that the legal doctrines and legislation passed during the operations against Pancho Villa constitute a 6th declaration of war. Congress may grant letters of marque and reprisal. Such letters are now obsolete. Congress may establish and support the armed forces, but no appropriation may be made for the support of the army may be used for more than 2 years. This provision was inserted because the framers feared the establishment of a standing army during peacetime. The provision is moot, however, since now appropriations for all purposes are made annually. Congress may regulate or call forth the state militias, but the states retain the authority to appoint officers and train personnel. Congress also has exclusive power to make rules and regulations governing the land and naval forces. Although the executive branch and the Pentagon have asserted an ever-increasing measure of involvement in this process, the U.S. Supreme Court has often reaffirmed Congress's exclusive hold on this power. Congress used this power twice soon after World War II, with the enactment of 2 statutes: the Uniform Code of Military Justice to improve the quality and fairness of court materials and military justice, and the Federal Tort Claims Act, which, among other rights, had allowed military service persons to sue for damages until the U.S. Supreme Court repealed that section of the statute in a divisive series of cases known collectively as the Ferez Doctrine. Congress has the exclusive right to legislate in all cases whatsoever for the nation's capital, the District of Columbia. Congress may also exercise such jurisdiction over land purchased from the states for the erection of forts and other buildings. Necessary and proper clause. Main article, necessary and proper clause. Finally, Congress has the power to do whatever is necessary and proper to carry out its enumerated powers. Thus, Congress may establish a system whereby those who violate laws are punished, though the Constitution explicitly provides for the punishment of only those who violate counterfeiting or maritime laws. The necessary and proper clause, however, has been interpreted extremely broadly, thereby giving Congress wide latitude in legislation. The first landmark case involving the clause was McCulloch v. Maryland, 1819, which involved the establishment of a national bank. Alexander Hamilton, in advocating the creation of the bank, argued that there was a more or less direct relationship between the bank and the powers of collecting taxes, borrowing money, regulating trade between the states, and raising and maintaining fleets and navies. Thomas Jefferson countered that Congress's powers can all be carried into execution without a national bank. A bank, therefore, is not necessary, and consequently not authorized by this phrase. Chief Justice John Marshall agreed with the former interpretation. Marshall wrote that a constitution listing all of Congress's powers would partake of a prolixity of a legal code and could scarcely be embraced by the human mind. Since the Constitution could not possibly enumerate the minor ingredients of the powers of Congress, Marshall deduced that Congress had the authority to establish a bank from the great outlines of the general welfare, commerce, and other clauses. Under this interpretation of the necessary and proper clause, Congress has sweepingly broad powers, known as implied powers, not explicitly enumerated in the Constitution. Section 9. Limits on Congress. The next section of Article 1 provided limits on Congress's powers. Section 9. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit, shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation, not exceeding $10 for each person. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. No capitation or other direct tax shall be laid, unless in proportion to the consensus or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. No tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obligated to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. no money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Although the international slave trade was allowed until 1808, Congress prohibited it on January 1, 1808, the first day it was permitted to do so. Until 1808, however, the Constitution permitted Congress to levy a maximum duty of $10 per slave imported into the United States. The Constitution further provides that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus may not be suspended except during rebellion or invasion. In Ex Parte Milligan, 1866, the Supreme Court held that the privilege of the writ could not be suspended while the civilian courts remained operational. Congress may not pass any bill of attainder or ex post facto law. Section 9 reiterates the provision from Section 2 that direct taxes must be apportioned on the basis of state populations. Furthermore, no tax may be imposed on exports from any state. Congress may not, by revenue or commerce legislation, give preference to ports of one state over those of another. Neither may it require ships from one state to pay duties in another. All funds belonging to the Treasury may not be withdrawn except in accordance with law. Modern practice is that Congress annually passes a number of appropriation bills authorizing the expenditure of public money. The Constitution requires that a regular statement of such expenditures be published. A bill of attainder is a law in which a person is immediately convicted without trial. An ex post facto law applies to something that took place before the law was passed or was not illegal at the time it took place. Congress may not grant any title of nobility. No civil officer may, without the consent of Congress, accept any emolument, office, or title from a foreign ruler or state. Section 10. Limits on the States. The final section of Article 1 outlines the limits on the powers of the states. Section 10. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. No state shall, without the consent of the Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. and the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops, or ships of war in time of peace, enter into any agreement or compact with another state, or with a foreign power, or engage in war, unless actually invaded, or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. States may not exercise some powers reserved for the federal government. They may not enter into treaties, alliances, or confederations, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, or issue bills of credit, such as currency. Furthermore, no state may make anything, such as Federal Reserve notes, but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debts. The states may not pass bills of attainder, ex post facto laws, impair the obligation of contracts, or grant titles of nobility. The contract clause was in the 19th century the subject of much contentious litigation. It was first interpreted by the Supreme Court in 1810, when Fletcher versus Peck was decided. The case involved the Yazoo land scandal, in which the Georgia legislature authorized the sale of land to spectators at low prices. The bribery involved in the passage of the authorizing legislation was so blatant that a Georgia mob attended to lynch the corrupt members of the legislature. Following elections, the legislature passed a law that rescinded the contracts granted by the corrupt legislatures. The validity of the annulment of the sale was questioned in the Supreme Court. In writing for a unanimous court, Chief Justice John Marshall asked, "What is a contract?" His answer was, "A compact between two or more parties." Marshall argued that the sale of land by the Georgia legislature, though fraught with corruption, was a valid contract. He added that the state had no right to annul the purchase of the land, since doing so would impair the obligations of contract. The definition of a contract, propounded by Chief Justice Marshall, was not as simple as it may seem. In 1819, the court considered whether or not a corporate charter could be construed as a contract. The case of trustees of Dartmouth College versus Woodward involved Dartmouth College, which had been established under a royal charter granted by King George III. The charter created a board of 12 trustees for the governance of the college. In 1815, however, New Hampshire passed a law increasing the board's membership to 21 so that public control could be exercised over the college. Marshall and the court ruled that New Hampshire could not amend the charter, which was ruled to be a contract, since it conferred vested rights on the trustees. Another dispute determined by the Marshall Court was Sturgis versus Crowninshield. The case involved a a debt that was contracted in early 1811. Later in that year, the state of New York passed a bankruptcy law under which the debt was later discharged. The Supreme Court ruled that a retroactively applied state bankruptcy law impaired the obligation to pay the debt and therefore violated the Constitution. In Ogden v. Saunders, 1827, however, the court decided that state bankruptcy laws could apply to debts contracted after the passage of the law. State legislation on the issue of bankruptcy and debtor relief has not been much of an issue since the adoption of a comprehensive federal bankruptcy law in 1898. Still, more powers are prohibited of the states. States may not, without the consent of Congress, tax imports or exports except for the fulfillment of state inspection laws, which may be revised by Congress. The net revenue of the tax is paid not to the state, but to the federal treasury. States may not, without the consent of Congress, keep troops or armies during times of peace. They may not enter into alliances nor compacts with foreign states, nor engage in war unless invaded. States may, however, organize and arm a militia. Currently, this function is fulfilled with federal oversight by the National Guard. This sound file and all text in the article are licensed under the GNU Free Documentation License, available at www.gnu.org/copyleft/fdl.html.